January 12, 2010 meeting of the City of Daytona Beach Special Magistrate proceedings. First off, I review the minutes of December 14th and approve them. I'll go ahead and execute them. They're right here. We'll proceed with the hearing case. Will those representatives for the City of Daytona Beach who will be testifying this morning's proceedings please step forward and be sworn?
Do you solemnly swear the testimony you're about to provide is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
All right, case number one is a continued case. Joseph Burton Hardy III, Joyce L. Wright, and Juliet Massey. Sir, if you would please state your name and be sworn.
Joseph Burton Hardy III.
Do you solemnly swear the testimony you're about to provide
is
the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Okay, we are here for the imposition of a fine, and we have a tiebreaker yet as far as the structural integrity of the floor, as I recall that was the issue.
Yes, sir. I went out, we opened up a section of the floor. There are some issues with the floor. Mr. Hardy then came in to obtain a building permit to further explore the extent of the damage. We issued that permit to him, I believe it was just like Friday or something.
1-5.
Okay, 1-5. He said that he would make personal contact with me once he got the floor opened up so that we could get in there and do further assessment and come up with a repair strategy. So Mr. Hardy has come in and obtained the permit, and given the you know, the weather and the timing and everything else, he said that he would be calling me probably this week sometime when it was available to look at the extent of the damage.
Okay, is the floor that all is the floor all we have left to deal with?
That's the last violation that happened.
Okay. All right. So what is it you're proposing?
Myself? Or
well, first off,
well, as soon as I can get in and actually evaluate the extent of the damage. Right now, the crawl space in the house is very limited as far as access goes, because of the way the crawl space is built and the beams, you actually can't get underneath it and access the entire area. But we've determined that basically the beam that runs through the center of the structure has some rot and you know, what we call wood destroying organisms issues, and has to be repaired. So what Mr. Hardy is going to do is he's going to open up a basically a 3 to 4 foot section that spans that beam so that he can get in, access the entire length of that beam, and do the repairs. But I have to get in there. I told Mr. Hardy that I would make a visual inspection of it, and if I deem that an architect or an engineer had to be called in, then we'd have to go from there, but I don't think that's going to be the case because we can just repair like for like. So that's what we're doing. I'm waiting on Mr. Hardy to open up the floor.
And how much time do you want to give Mr. Hardy to open up the floor so that I can figure out where we're going with this?
Well, what do you need? I mean, when we spoke last week, you thought that you'd be able to get to it, you know, probably this week and open it up.
Yeah, probably this week, but end of last week, early part of this week, over the weekend, I was ill.
All right, well, let's do this. I'm going to set this for a progress. I'm going to continue this matter one more time to our February 9th meeting. Okay, so that gives us almost 30 days to get this done. I assume that's ample time. Is that right?
I can get over.
Pardon?
Yes.
Okay, well, I'm setting it for February 9th for a progress report. And at that time, we're not going to set a compliance date. We're going to impose a fine. So, by all means, let's keep working together and get this thing resolved. Okay?
Mr. Rebelja, just for clarification for the record, that will be a continuance for the matter of imposing fine.
Yes, before us right now for the imposition of a fine, as I understand it.
Right. Okay. So you'd be evaluating the paper progress, but it's on continuance for the imposition of fine to next month.
Yeah, I probably shouldn't use the words progress report. I'll continue the matter one more time for our February 9th meeting give Mr. Hardy an opportunity to open this floor up, to give the city an opportunity to see what's involved. And then on February 9th, hopefully we're going to reconvene. At that time, we'll be able to talk about how long it's going to take to get this work done. Okay?
Okay, so I'm being governed now by permits and licensings or code enforcement or both?
You're what now?
Who am I being governed by at this time? Permits and licensing?
Me.
You?
Yeah. Okay. So, by February 9th, I want to make sure that we keep moving forward on this. I expect to see you all back here. The city will be here. You'll be here. But at that point, is there a problem?
I'll be here.
I mean, I can make a ruling right now if you want me
to. Well, I'll go. I'm listening to what you're saying now.
Okay. By February 9th, we're going to reconvene. We're going to get a report on where we stand once the city is fully aware of the extent of the damage they want to see, and we're going to agree or decide a completion date. Okay? Good luck to you all. Case number two, Kelly R. Doherty.
I do.
Can you say your name, please?
Kelly R. Doherty.
All right. This matter is here for consideration of a fine or progress report regarding restoration of water. All right. Have we made any progress with regard to the restoration of water?
No. I'm still, like I say, looking for work. This is even a worse time of year. And like I said, the last time, the best thing I can offer is when I get steady employment and run down here and try to work out a plan with them. I've followed your instructions as before. I had somebody had moved in somewhat with me to keep their stuff there and was trying to help with the bills, but you told me I had to move them out, that nobody could stay there and I couldn't rent, so that became a nightmare. And I just don't know what to say other than, you know, I'm seeking gainful employment because God knows I need it, and I want to move back into my house correctly and get things in order. But I just can't tell you something that that's just not happening. You know the economy. And
is the exterior being maintained?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I'm taking care of the exterior and everything else. And matter of fact, I'm doing little repairs here and there when I can for what I got inside the house. But as far as the utilities and that big water bill, what little bit I make, it just has to go towards my food and, you know, taking care of things.
Mr. Mukelja, we've been back and forth with this one for a while. The power meter was restored. It's now gone again.
Yeah.
The water meter itself has been completely removed from the property. The hole's been filled. It's been capped. So in addition to whatever's left over on the outstanding water bill, he's going to wind up having to pay another fee to have a new water meter installed and all of that rework. We're considering a fine. I would say $25 a day, I mean, which is pretty much loot at this point because he's having problems.
You know, at what point is a house no longer a house, just out of curiosity? I mean, I would think once you pull the power and once you pull the water.
Well, you can actually live in the house without power.
Cave.
You can't do it without. You can't live there without water. We're talking about dogs in the house at one point in time, and he said he wasn't actually living there. He was just leaving his dogs there. But now without the power and the temperature outside, hopefully those dogs.
Well, I've got my neighbor. He runs an electric cord, and I do a little stuff for him over there, and I put a heater in the kitchen and let him in, and I take care of my dogs. I'm over there three times a day. Matter of fact, y'all came by and sent animal control by after the last time I was here, and I had to answer to them because they came over and questioned my dogs. And I told them, I said, I have a fenced in yard. I said, when it's raining, I let them in. I'm over there three times a day. And that's one thing I take care of, my pets. And as far as staying there, as I'm in and out, and I've been staying over in a friend's garage, to tell you the truth, and helping him out for that. So that's taking a little bit more of my income. And like I say, I could live in the house the way it is, but in this cold temperature, I most definitely can't. And so restoring all this stuff is just a given of time, you know, when I can get work. It's not what I want to be, as homeless, living out in the woods or in somebody's garage. But the more and more I get into this, difficulties is the less time I have looking for work, because I'm having to compensate by bartering myself, you know, for little things here and there. And that's the way I've been living for quite some time now, due to this economic situation.
And how much are these bills that you mentioned before? $1,900?
Oh, the water bill's $1,900, and since I let this last person move in who was supposed to pay the electric, I ended up paying half of it, and then I got stuck with the residual because they got angry because I had to ask them to leave because of the last meeting, and they took off. So that bill's going to reflect on me one of these days soon because I'm the property owner. It's kind of a catch-22 that I'm going through. So,
okay, and the city's suggestion is a fine of $25 per day?
Yes, sir.
Okay, Mr. Daugherty, do me indulge me and tell me how we break this impasse somewhere down the alley.
Like I say, the best I can do is I go looking for work. And like I say, you know the economic thing. My age, I've got almost 3 trades under my belt. I just cannot find any employment, and I would take anything. So, you know, I'm doing part-time stuff just to survive. I'm not collecting money off the state or anything else. No food benefits or nothing. And I'm just waiting to get, you know, any gainful employment. And like I said, the first thing I would do is come down here and see if I could work something out with them. Of course, I would imagine at this point, it's like, I'm sorry, I forgot your name. They came out for some reason and pulled the meter and poured concrete in the thing, I guess due to these proceedings, or I'd been over there asking, or I really have no idea. And so that's just more money that's being added on every time they do that. And I had caught the water man. I said, well, what did you do that for? He goes, we just had an order to come over here and do that. So, you know, the more and more things that they do, the more and more is going to be tacked on. I'm sure that's going to be an extra $200 or $300. And I don't know. You know, I'm not doing anything but just trying to get work. That's all there is to it. And due to the circumstances of the economy, you know that the work is just down and out at this point in time. But it's not like I'm pushing anything away or wanting to, you know, lay around and be lazy. Yes, most definitely.
Well, there are a finite number of outcomes here. You come into compliance. I fine you as suggested by the city, which is adds to your load, or the property gets demolished. 2 out of 3 of those stink.
Yeah. I sure do.
And I don't know how much longer I can continue kicking you down the calendar for the sake of trying to help you out. Okay. That having been said, the house is unoccupied right now, is that correct?
Yes.
And the exterior is being maintained?
Yes, sir.
Correct.
All right. I'm going to continue this for another 60 days to our March 9, 2010 meeting. I don't know that I can change the world for you, but I give you another 60 days to try to get something resolved. And after that, 2 out of those other 3 possibilities all of a sudden start climbing up on the table.
Okay.
Unless you can figure something out.
I appreciate that.
It could be very bad news, but we're at a total
logjam
here.
I read in the paper.
And you know, something has to happen with the house. I mean, if you're not able to manage the house, then and it's not for me to tell people what to do with their property. But if the thing can be sold and you can make a few bucks on it, maybe you want to try that.
I'll try
to tell you, and it's not my place to tell you. I'm just throwing ideas at you because, unfortunately, where we're at right now, something's going to have to be resolved.
Can I ask you, what are the laws if I were to move my animals out and close the place up and move out? I wouldn't have to have my water and electric on then, would I?
You're already
there. Huh?
Aren't you already there?
Yeah, but I mean, other than my animals, I mean, you know, if some...
We allow you to have your animals there, as I recall, just for sort of security purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And quite frankly, unoccupied means unoccupied. Mm-hmm. But since, as I recall, you had a problem with keeping the animals somewhere else, we allowed you to keep them there.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, to our city attorney, he can tell you. All right, and Amy, I want the minutes to reflect on March 9, 2010. I indicated that It was unlikely there were going to be any more continuances, and the matter be here for imposition of a fine or determination of compliance date. All right, good luck to you.
Thanks, sir.
Case number 3, Harmon Investments, LLC. Progress report.
Morning.
State your name, please.
Richard Harmon. I do.
Okay. Progress?
Progress. We got the plans and everything resubmitted to the city. We're waiting on the permit or whatever else we have to do to revise the plans.
Mr. Bekelja, I just talked to Colleen Wiles this morning. Cortez Investments is now in charge of the property. They've been in contact with Colleen. Colleen is very happy with their progress. There are some complications of taxes and the parcels, but she said that the progress should be going forward, and I was hoping that they would be here because she was talking so many different issues involved with this. I didn't note them all down, but she said that the new company is following through with the permit process, so I recommend a progress report next month.
Now, are we going to get a progress report next month, or is there a chance that we'll get compliance next month?
At this point, because of the amount of issues that needed to be taken care of on the resubmittal for the site plan, it would probably be better to go for a progress report.
Do we have a new owner now?
Yes.
And is the new owner going to get substituted or added to this proceeding?
Yes. In fact, we should probably add those. Cortez Investment Group, Inc.
What's the status of Harmon Investment LLC? Is that still exist?
I'm just the manager of the property now.
Okay, so yeah, you want to add in this situation. Okay. You would want to add Cortez.
But Cortez is not the only owner. There's four owners now.
They're all part of the Cortez Investment.
No.
So we can ask about Mr. Farmer.
Yes.
Okay. Well, if we're going to continue on, we need to know who the new people are. So, who are the new people?
You got Cortez Investments, John Butts, Douglas Pearson, and Worldwide Chicago Branch Incorporated.
These are all four co-owners of this property?
Yes.
Okay. All right. And
but I know they're
aware of this proceeding?
Oh, yes.
And they've actually been involved.
Right.
What I'm hearing from the inspectors, correct?
Yeah. Actually, right now, I know that they're looking into the federal law of going green and putting it all in asphalt chippings instead of having any grass and stuff there. So,
procedurally, how do we...
Yeah, just one clarification. You named all these people, they're co-owners, they're not partnership.
No, they're all partners in that ownership.
Have they formed a partnership, or are they just
co-owners? No, they're co-owners of, percentage of it.
Okay. Percentage of what?
The ownership of the properties.
Okay.
Like Cortez Investments, just to give you an idea, Dave, is 50% owner. John Butts is like 25%, and then the other ones are 12.5%.
And I'm going to continue this matter to our February 9th, 2010 meeting for another progress report. And in the interim, we will have the new owners added as respondents to this proceeding. Okay.
Can I just get clarification on the last, the worldwide?
Chicago branch.
Chicago
branch.
Branch, okay. Thank you.
And you are still the property manager?
You're correct.
You have authority to speak on their behalf at this proceeding?
Yes.
Very good. Anything else, Tom?
No, that's it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
And we'll see you or someone February 9th, 2010.
All righty.
Thank you. Case number 4, Five Star of Central Florida.
Okay. So it's not bad.
You saw him as well as the testimony that's provided, the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
All right, I have here that this is for me for imposition of a fine if not in compliance with electrical life safety issues for building 208. So how do we stand on the electrical life safety issues for building 208?
He's in compliance. Actually, if I could pass these over to the secretary. We obtained the permit and it was approved and picked it up on the 23rd last month, and they made repairs on the 28th in building 208. And the electrical safety issues have been resolved.
Okay.
Just need a progress report as to.
All right, so how do we stand on working our way toward compliance on March 3rd?
We are working by apartment to apartment, and then we are calling for an inspection with Mr. Syke.
So does it look like it can be done by March 3rd?
Hopefully.
Okay. Fair to Midland chance? Long shot? Give me something here.
I don't know myself.
Okay. Fair enough. All right, well, if you get in a bind and you run out of time, a word to the wise.
We
are asking this gentleman to keep fully informed of what's going on and whatever problems you're encountering.
Yes, sir.
All right. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Case number 5, Herbert Aguiar.
The city would like to impose a fine of $150. There has been no contact with the owner since the last hearing. There has been no progress on the property on any of the violations.
Pardon?
On any of the violations. Nothing's been done at all.
And we've been dealing with this since December of 2008?
Correct.
Is this a residence, a rental, what?
It's a single-family home. One of the violations would be non-conforming use because he split the house in half by plywood on the inside. So he's actually turned it into
a non-conforming structure.
Correct.
And you've gotten no cooperation from the respondent at all?
None.
I'm going to go ahead and find the respondent. So $150 per day, commencing January 6, 2010, and continuing each day thereafter until the property is in compliance. Thank you.
Thank you.
Case number 6, 400 Beach Street Acquisitions, LLC.
Mr. McKelvey, the part of this that we're looking for it to be secured by 1-6, they are. They have secured the building by that date, sir, so that part is in compliance. They are moving forward on the demolition of that part of the building. So I would say that we have a good progress, and we can continue on as the compliance date as indicated. I apologize for the next progress report of 2-9.
So we have another progress report on February 9. Presumably at that point we'll be setting the compliance.
Yes, sir. That's when they're supposed to have an idea when it's going to be taken down and have everything worked out with the city, with the redevelopment department and everything else.
Okay. And you're satisfied with what's going on so far?
So far.
Very good. Okay, thank you. Case number 7 is in compliance. Case number 8 is in compliance. Which brings us to case number 9, Ronald Mitchell and Jacqueline Bass Mitchell.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Did you say your name, please?
Ronald Mitchell.
Can you raise your right hand? Do you solemnly swear that the testimony you're about to provide is the truth and the whole truth and nothing but the truth?
I do.
And I have here that we're here for the imposition of a fine plus one-time $250 fine. So, Madam Inspector, what's the status of compliance?
It's not a rental anymore. He is the owner and occupying it.
Right.
So the imposition of the $250 fine is, don't need that any longer.
All right.
he, within the last few months, has become living in the property. And prior to that, there was no correspondence, nothing going on with the owner, and it was a real mess. Since he has moved in, there has been some improvement. However, there's outside storage in the backyard, there's some wooden pallets, there's some tires and carport, there are some things that are stored out there that we discussed and were supposed to be removed. I went by yesterday and they were not. And I think he has some things that he wants to talk to you about as far as time frame for repairing the roof.
Right.
Okay. Well, let's break this down. With regard to this, let's separate the roof from all the other stuff. All the other stuff sounds pretty simple and pretty easy. So how much time should be required to come into compliance with the removal of the outside storage, things of that nature?
That shouldn't take any longer than a couple days.
Okay. And your estimate with regard to the roof?
Okay.
It shouldn't take any longer than 30 days. However, he did have a permit, and that permit was up at the end of December. So he has to apply for a new permit and then get the roof done. But once the permit is in hand, it should not take longer than 30 days.
So that I can understand whatever sort of order I'm going to fashion here, everything except the roof that remains to be done should be done in a couple of days,
right,
if I understand your estimate. The roof, possibly 30 days, but he's probably going to have to get a new permit.
Correct.
Right.
All right. Okay, what say Mr. Mitchell?
I agree with that. It's just a matter of the finance as far as the roof. As far as the stuff, debris around the house, that can be eliminated today, you know. But the roof, I need a little time.
Okay, what's the status of the roof right now?
Okay, it's been dried in, but financing for the shingles, that's been the problem.
You know, have your shingles yet?
Not yet, sir.
Okay, and when do you expect to have them?
Within 30 days.
All right.
Right.
And once you have those shingles, how long is it going to take you to finish the job?
As soon as I get the shingles.
And how long is it going to take them to get another permit?
Okay, that'll be probably the same time.
I don't think it takes that long to get a permit.
No.
So.
No.
All right, so if I give you 30 days on all the miscellaneous stuff and 60 days on the roof,
okay,
you ought to be able to get it done?
That'd be great. That'd be great.
Save the city.
That'd be fine.
Okay. All right, I'm going to go ahead and order that the respondent coming from compliance by March 3 of 2010 with regard to the roof.
That'd be great.
And by February 3, 2010, with regard to everything else that remains to be done. Failing either of those, the respondent is to be returned to the special magistrate for consideration of a fine of $1,000 per day. Okay. Good luck to you.
All right.
Get the little stuff done as quickly as possible. Get your permit. Stay in touch with your inspector with regard to your efforts to get the roof on.
Okay.
When you run into a problem, be sure to let her know.
Yes, sir.
All right, good luck to you.
Appreciate it.
And get an extension.
Mr. Mitchell?
A little shorter. Okay, next case, Lance L. Thate and Lacey J. Thate. Anyone here on behalf of the respondent? What say the city?
There is no occupational license, so non-compliance next cutoff.
All right. Seeing no respondent, based on the report of our inspector, I find the respondent to be in non-compliance. I order the respondent come into compliance by February 3, 2010, or be fined the $250. Is that what we're talking
about? Yeah, the one-time fee.
The one-time fee of $250 for failure to obtain an occupational license?
Yes.
All right, there you go. Thank you.
Mr.
Rebecca,
do you need an automatic
fine
imposed or be returned for consideration?
Can I impose the fine? I don't think I can impose the fine now.
That's why I
was. So I have to have a second.
That's
case number 11, Joyce C. Perry. Not seeing the respondent. What say the city?
Mr. Kelsey, this case has been going on for some time. It's been an abandoned property by the owner. A gentleman has come into the picture that is declaring himself as a friend of the owner and has been answering for it and indicating that he can speak on her behalf. It was cited for several things, but what is remaining is the interior or the interior of a restroom, that area, which is next to the pool, basically a wet room, if you want to call it, next to his pool. The pool has been taken care of, but this is still remaining. He's aware of it. He's been told, and he's supposed to have had somebody take care of it, and he has not. The last response I had from him, I have not heard from him advising him that I was going forward with it, so I've had no contact for about a month now. I can say this non-compliance, that's cut off, would be fine.
Based on our inspector's report, I find the respondent to be in non-compliance. Order the respondent to commit compliance by February 3, 2010, or be returned to the special magistrate for consideration of a fine of up to $1,000 per day thereafter. Thank you. Case number 12, Galaxy Buick Incorporated and Daytona Auto Body and Repair.
Jacob Nepcharlian, Daytona Auto Body.
Jacob
Nepcharlian, Daytona Auto Body and Repair.
Jacob Nepcharlian, raise your right hand, please. Do you solemnly swear the testimony you're about to provide, the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Could you please speak into the microphone,
please?
Yes.
Okay, sir, do you agree this violation existed or occurred as stated in the notice of violation?
From what I understand, it occurred. I recently applied for the permit. It's been there for 5 days. I believe I'm in compliance. You're just waiting to sign it or pay for it, and I'll issue it to me.
Let's hang on. All right, I find the respondent to be in non-compliance. Okay, Mr. Inspector, this gentleman is indicating that you may be in compliance now. That having been said, how much time do you think it would take for him to come into compliance?
Non-compliance starts cut off. I just simply need to go down and verify that. It is for these signages that were in the redevelopment area that were not conforming and had no permits. I cited both the property owner and the business owner. That's why Galaxy is on there. He represents Daytona Auto, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm Daytona Auto Body, yeah.
So it's as simple as that. If it's been filed and done, no problem. This next cut off.
Okay, our inspector is indicating that you should be able to have this wrapped up by February 3, 2010. I know it may sound silly if you tell me it's done already, but in any event, can you have it wrapped up by February 3, 2010?
Absolutely, yes, sir.
Okay, make sure you follow through on the paperwork that he's talking about. Otherwise, this thing will just sit here and fester, and we'll be reading about it in the Sunday newspaper.
I already had the permit. Okay.
All right. Well, hang on a second. But I'm going to go ahead and order the respondents to come into compliance by February 3, 2010, or be returned to the special magistrate for consideration of a fine of up to $1,000 per day thereafter. All right. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Case number 13, Coliseum and Burgoyne Properties Incorporated.
How are you?
Can you say your name, please?
Randy Berner.
Sir?
Henry McClellan.
Can you raise your right hand, please? Do you solemnly swear the testimony you're about to provide is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
Okay, erecting sign, no permit, right-of-way. You gentlemen agree this violation existed or occurred as stated in the notice of violation?
It's actually an awkward situation for us. We bring in performers and artists, and they handle their own promotions. We definitely do not buy these signs, order these signs, or post these signs. I understand the complaint from the city, but at the same time, our contracts with the artists as we bring them into the theater strictly states that all advertising outside the Coliseum must be approved by property owner or property manager. Absolutely no advertising will be conducted on public or city property without the consent of the city. And that's in every contract we do. So as we hire in artists, they actually take it upon themselves to do their whatever it is that they're doing. We don't purchase these signs. I believe this is literature that's on telephone poles or wherever else. So I'm trying to understand myself how I'm responsible for it, even though I am the
property owner.
Well, property manager, and I'm actually the tenant, but at the same time, from a competitive business, if I were looking at a competitor, why don't I go print up a bunch of signs for them and put them on the telephone poles so that they end up standing here at this podium?
Pretty nasty.
It would be, but I mean, I have no knowledge. Mr. Chitwood, Mr. Chisholm visited me last year in March, spring break. We had some very aggressive literature art on Beachside. We got in trouble. They made it very clear to me what you can and cannot do in Daytona Beach, and since then we've not done it. Our companies that we've hired, artists, entertainers that come in, they have their own teams. They call them street teams, and they try to, you know, make their event big. I don't know how to control it. It's not authorized by us, and it's strictly stated in our contracts with these people.
I would say,
Mr. Kelch, I'd like to know, we have a representative of both the property, which is Burgoyne, which I've known for quite some time, and of course the Coliseum. So I want to let you know that both parties were noticed of these violations. The circumstances are is that this property is now in compliance, and I'm looking for a will find situation. And the circumstances were much like we had a case sometime back down at the old Woolworths building, same circumstances, where I only have one course of action, somebody to go to get my compliance. As far as the promoter being the only single one, I would like to bring the attention to these two items, which are part of the source of it, where Coliseum is indicated on both of them as part of the advertisement. These are two of the items that we have cited for. And in those circumstances, that would make them aware this is advertisement for Coliseum. And though I know a promoter and I understand that, as I have for years, but I have to hold somebody accountable. As they indicated, there was issues in the past with Chief Chitwood, and this has gone on. This is the point where we have to do something. So again, the city is looking for a will find, basically for the Coliseum, for this type of advertisement on the city right-of-ways. They were put on poles, traffic boxes. I had to go out and peel them off with traffic boxes. I had to complain about them. Maybe because I'm sure it's because of this event. But I dealt with the complaint, and I told them, and I was honest with them up front about it. I have to do something.
Can you hold that up one more time? If I were to purchase that sign or authorize it, the Coliseum would have been as big as this Chippendale. It's a national act, and they buy those signs, and they hang those signs, and we strictly in our contract state not. So even though I understand him saying that we're guilty here, I just find it hard to believe that I could go post signs for Razzle's Nightclub or Oyster Pub or any other company in town, and they would be standing at this podium going, I don't know anything about it. But yet they would still be liable.
No, they wouldn't be liable.
Well, I am.
Say we didn't do it.
I'm telling you, I didn't do it. But I can't say that because I don't know who did it.
The city with propaganda that has nothing to do with us, and they're trying to put us out of.
I don't agree with that neither.
And I hear it, and I hear testimony, and I decide who I believe and didn't believe. There's a whole process here. Just like there's a contract like you have, where, and I'm glad that the contract says that they're not supposed to do this, that, what have you. Now, the city can't enforce that contract for you. That would be interference with contract if the city were even to attempt to do so.
Mm-hmm.
The only parties who can enforce your contract is you. And it may sound draconian to say, I'm sorry, but you're going to have to leave, or I'm sorry, but you're going to have to guarantee you're going to pay any fines that I may be subjected to. You know, there might be any number of things that you'll have to come up with to try to rectify a situation, but as they say, as the property owner, the buck stops with you. Doesn't stop with the city. And yeah, I'm sure some clever competitor could wreak havoc out there. And heaven forbid we find that should be the case because we deal with it. All right, so that having been said, I find that the respondent was in noncompliance. Based on the testimony presented to me, I find that the respondent is now in compliance. I'm going to further order that for every such future occurrence, the respondent be returned to the special magistrate for consideration of a fine of up to, what is it?
$5,000
per occurrence. Now, before you go home and start playing with your pistols and anything like that, by all means, keep, you know, if this should happen again, then you may be facing a fine. Fines get progressive. You know, we have nice little reminder fines, and we have, well, it's getting more serious fines.
5,000 sounds pretty good.
Well, now we're getting really mad fines. So keep that in mind. Try to impress upon your promoters and what have you. They can't be doing this. I'd probably throw in that contract something to the effect that if we get fined because you ignore this, you're going to be paying it. You're going to be reimbursing this. But that's your business. But my point is, you're the only one who can control it. The city can't, and you're the ones that we look to.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you.
And if these situations do occur in the future, I would make sure that I've somehow documented or kept a record of every effort I made to make sure it wouldn't happen, so that when I sat, if I stood there where you are, I could say with a straight face, we got an out-of-control promoter who was absolutely told not to do this repeatedly, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and I'll certainly take that into consideration. But the responsibility for keeping the junk off the street for the business that comes onto your property is yours. Okay?
Gotcha.
Good luck to you.
Thanks, sir.
Number 14, Ernest Deloach Jr. and Dolores Riles.
Good morning.
Say your name, please.
Sure, Ernest Deloach Jr.
Can you raise your right hand, please? Do you solemnly swear that the testimony you're about to provide is the truth,
and
the whole truth, and
nothing
but the truth?
I do.
All right, Mr. Deloach, the notice of violation says failure to paint exterior trim and unpainted surfaces, failure to obtain rental license.
Yes, sir.
Violations existed or occurred as stated in the notice of violation?
Your Honor, I would acknowledge. I'm used to saying Your Honor, I apologize. <All right. laughs> Professional hazard. We acknowledge the paint issue. I did have a conversation with the city and actually sent a couple of letters just to confirm that the home is not being rented. And so based on that, I would presume then that the rental license would not be applicable.
Yes, the city would like to strike the rental license. We've talked and confirmed that, and we were only going to ask for the painting issue, which he did talk to me about it. I'd already had it on the agenda, as I told him, and 99.9% of all cases, we're going to give some time to begin with right up front, sufficient enough time, which will be until next cutoff, to take care of it.
And I'm under that same understanding. So the plan would be for us to, I believe, by your next, well, our discussion was, obviously, it's up to you, but we're prepared to, by your next scheduled meeting, to make sure the home is in compliance with regard to the paint issue and some additional work, actually, that we talked about that's not in violation, but something that probably needs to be done as well.
Okay, I'll go ahead and find the respondent to be in non-compliance. In order to respond, what have we decided? Next cutoff's enough time?
February 3rd?
February 3rd. Yes.
Just out of curiosity, can you even paint outside right now?
Yeah. There'll be some nice days coming up here for 70s.
Okay, order the respondent come to compliance by February 3, 2010, or be returned to the special magistrate for consideration of fine of up to $1,000 per day thereafter. Now, notwithstanding our professional painter over here, I wouldn't want to be painting the exterior of anything right
yeah.
now. Anyway, my point is if you run into a problem,
yes, sir.
This gentleman right here is going to be your best friend if
yes.
you end up back here.
Okay.
If he says, I heard from Mr. Deloach, he did everything that he could. Then we'll consider more time.
Okay. Good Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. Thanks again.
Okay.
Case number 15, Mohammed M. Abazay. Not seeing the respondent. What say the city?
This is definitely non-compliance. Next cutoff. I've had no contact with the owner. He did respond to the notice of violation. I did receive a green card, but outside of that, there's been no progress. The last few times I've been on the property, there's been, for lack of a better term, a squatter there. And ultimately, there's been no change with the property.
Any life safety issues?
No, it's actually secure. It just looks really bad.
All right. How much time to come into compliance?
Next cutoff.
Based on our inspector's report, I find the respondent to be non-compliance in order the respondent to come into compliance by February 3, 2010, or be returned to the special magistrate for consideration of a fine of up to $1,000 per day thereafter. Case number 16 I have is in compliance. Case number 17, Matthews Properties, LLC.
That's compliance 1-8. 1-8.
Case number 18, Heiko H. Folkerts and Ralph Bernster. Mm-hmm.
Morning.
Good morning. Your
name is Ralph C. Garstner.
Raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear the testimony about the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Garstner, do you agree these violations existed or occurred as stated in the notice of violation?
Yes.
All right, I find the respondent to be in noncompliance. Mr. Inspector, how much time do you think would reasonably be required to come into compliance?
I would say it'd be March cutoff because it's an apartment building. There's quite a work left to be done. He has begun on the work. I met with him on property and pointed out specific violations that needed to be addressed. And he has been working with me. Good progress. But he still has a lot of work to do. That's why I say the March cutoff.
Is this building occupied right now?
Yes.
It's occupied by you?
No, it's a 20-unit complex.
It's the Whispering Winds on Thomason, right off of Mason, just west of the tracks.
I have the list of violations, and I plan on going over and above by painting the structure and doing some more curb appeal, possibly sealing the parking lot. And
all right, and did I hear you say March?
Yes, sir.
All right. Our inspector suggests that you could be in compliance by March 3, 2010. What do you say?
That's fine with me. I should be in compliance.
Okay. All right. I'll go ahead and order the respondent to come into compliance by March 3, 2010, or be returned to the special magistrate for consideration of a fine of up to $1,000 per day thereafter. Looks to me like quite a project, so if you start getting yourself into a bind, please stay in touch with the inspector and let him know, keep him informed as to what's going on.
Yes.
All right, good luck to you.
Yeah, thank you.
Case number 19, Mary Dent Reed.
That's compliance, 112.
Case number 20, RDW Property Management Incorporated, Robert D. Williams. Yes, sir. If you would please state your name.
I'm Robert Williams.
Raise your right hand, please.
Sure.
Do you solemnly swear that the testimony you're about to provide is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
Okay, Mr. Williams, do you agree these violations existed or occurred as stated in the notice of violation?
Actually, I have a court reporter en route, but I don't think that I need it for this juncture of.
You want to wait for your court reporter? We've got other stuff we can move on to.
No, actually, I don't. At this juncture, for this first hearing, I don't think that I need the court reporter. Basically, my position to these or this particular notice of violation is simply that there were at one point in time some issues in reference to these violations that possibly existed, but it's probably more in a sense of notice here. To be honest with you, I don't have a problem. You know, this is 2010. I don't have a problem with being notified of violations and then trying to work with the inspector to get those violations taken care of, but I've actually been blindsided by this notice here. And as you see here, it says date of first notification, 11/13/2008, and then it has a date here that says date provided for correction, 1/5/2009, and then it goes on to say a reinspection date all the way down to December 16, 2009, which is almost a year from the original. Originally, around November of 2008, I had been given some notification about violations. I disputed the majority of those violations, and that notice did not consist of the violations that's on this notice here that we're before here on. And when I disputed those issues then, back in November, my understanding, at least I thought, that the matter was nullified, and I hadn't heard, and that notice said that a reinspection would occur within 30 days. you know, I contacted the inspector, I contacted the city attorney, and I disputed the violations in whole. But there were some legitimate violations that were on there, and I took care of those. And I thought the issue was done and closed. There was not a reinspection within 30 days. I hadn't heard anything from the inspector or anyone else after I disputed it, and I thought the matter was closed. More recently, I had gotten a bill last month. Well, in November, I had gotten a water bill for about $400-something for the property. The property is obviously rental property. And I came to the city and I said, well, when I got the bill, I came to the city to find out what was going on with a $400 bill. And during the course of investigating that, it was determined that the city was billing me as a duplex, as a multifamily dwelling, which of course is a single family dwelling, and had been doing so since I've owned the property for almost 6 or 7 years. So they had been double billing me, but the property is actually a single family residence. So I attempted to get that change from the city. You know, I didn't even go to the city and say, look, you owe me back payments for all this time that you've been double charging me. I said, look, you basically have it labeled incorrectly. Could you change it the way that it's supposed to be? The next thing I know, I went to D.C. with my kids for the holidays. I got back a couple of days ago. One of the tenants, it was a notice stuck on the door about a violation that allegedly occurred a year ago. So I make an issue, or I make some inquiries about being billed for over a course of several years about how the property was designated, and then all of a sudden I get a new notice about things that they're saying is wrong with the property that the original notice in November of 2008 didn't even mention. So I didn't even have an opportunity to address these. Had they, you know, and the reason I had a court reporter coming is because I wanted to cross-examine some of these and find out what was the delay of over a year. No one has been in contact with me. Where did these violations come from? You never notified me about these different violations. True enough, I got a violation notice in November of 2008. It did not consist of these violations. They have my telephone number. I notified them of the address, the appropriate address to notify me of with RDW Property Management. I've never tried to avoid the city. I've been, you know, interacting with the city. When I came back a couple of days ago from Washington, D.C., I see that notices were sent to the address that I gave the city attorney in reference to where to send correspondence to, but those notices were given within the last about 2 or 3 weeks, which I've been in D.C. So no time within this whole year has anyone been in contact with me about, look, these are problems that's ongoing, you need to take care of them. You know, I've always worked with the city to try to deal with this. There's no purpose to avoid it, because you can't avoid it, because eventually you're going to have to deal with it. So I don't have a problem with working with the city, but I don't like the fact that this notice of violation comes out of nowhere after I inquire about me being charged, you know, an excessive amount of water bill, and being charged basically as a multi-family unit when they know it's a single-family unit, and I have a license for a single-family unit, and they came in this proceeding before and testified under oath that this is a single-family residence, but they've been charging me for water as a multi-family unit for over 6 or 7 years. So once I made that inquiry, this came out of nowhere. So,
do these photographs accurately depict the condition of the property?
Yes, it does.
Well, first of all, I don't even know who this young lady is that's speaking.
You don't need to know who that young lady is. The question I asked you is, do these photographs truly and accurately condition?
Well, that's, I would like to continue this until the court reporter gets here. I don't know, now, some of these, to be honest with you, I can't attest. Now, that stuff is not current. some of these things probably was in this condition at one point in time. I don't know when these pictures were taken in order for me to come.
There's a date of that.
Date. 1609.
Well, if those pictures were taken on that date and someone can verify that, then I would say that probably at that point that was in fact. Now, you have to keep in fact that this is rental property. Now, one thing, one person could assume that I have direct control of this. You know, I rent to tenants. They have leases. In those leases, one of the things that, this is what occurs with the lease that I have with the tenants. I pay the utilities. I pay the water utilities. I pay the cable utilities. I pay the light utilities. In their leases, they are responsible for the upkeep of the property. Now, if it's brought to my attention by them or by some other form, let's say per se the city, that this is in this condition, then I'm going to do one of two things. I'm going to notify them that they need to, per their lease, pay to get that taken care of, or I'm going to evict them, and I'm going to take care of it. Now, if people are living in that condition, if they're living in that condition and they're not notifying me, or they're destroying something and trying to patch it up or what have you just so they can stay in that condition, and I don't know about it, I can't repair it. But I will get them out of there, and I will repair it. But the fact of the matter is, that's one of the, you have to weigh certain things when you rent property. I get tenants to come in there by saying, look, I'll pay the utilities, but you take care of the repairs. And I could just as simply do a lease and say, you take care of the utilities and I take care of any repairs. But I know that in this particular business that people are not going to treat your property the way that they would treat their own property. So people are going to just go through it, and some people, not everyone, will go through and just damage stuff and still live in that. Look, I don't live in that type of, I'm sorry, I don't live in that type of condition in my home, and I'm not the type of person that would allow someone to intentionally live in that type of conditions.
Mr. Williams, let's cut to the quick here. Let's start talking current events. Let's assume, well, I've heard testimony that these conditions occurred. You've indicated that some of these conditions may very well have occurred.
Yes.
Okay. If that's the case, then my inclination is to find you in non-compliance. Now, if you want to air out all sorts of explanations as to what's happened in the past, that's fine. Although, to be perfectly honest, I don't know that it'll be very meaningful to me, because I'll be more interested in knowing what the current condition of the property is and how we come into compliance and how much time you're going to need to come into compliance.
I respect that. I respect that. Now, I'll say this. If that is the condition of this property at this point in time, I will make an effort to do one of two things. Either I will evict who's there if they don't want to, like I told you before. If you notify me of what's going on with the property, now I would say that
no,
if...
Let me stop you right there.
Sure, go ahead.
You're presupposing that you don't have any obligation to know the condition of your own property.
No, that's not what I said.
Well, when you say, if you notify me as to what I need to do, then I'll go take care of it. It's your property. It's your tenant. And just as you probably heard me explain to a couple respondents a little earlier, who may be fine just because people are putting posters out there on the street, that even though they specifically tell them they're not to do so, and even though they have a contract that says they can't do that, they're still going to be ultimately responsible if it happens. Now, the reality here is that it looks as though we have a property that's in need of repair. How you deal with your tenant is your business. It's not the city's right or obligation to do anything with regard to your tenant. As I said earlier, the buck stops with you because you're the property owner. Now, the only thing, I've pretty much heard enough testimony to tell me that the property is in noncompliance. The only inquiry then is going to be how much time you need to bring it into compliance. And in that regard, if you're going to need some of that time to evict a tenant, I'll take that into consideration too. Because odds are you can't start on the work until the tenant's out of the way. But that's your call. So my point is, at some point, are you going to be prepared to talk about how much time it's going to take to bring this into compliance?
Yes, I'm going to be prepared to talk about that. Matter of fact, I'm going to talk about it now. But I did want to add, though, you know, don't drag me into a hearing and, in essence, try to ambush me. You know, you have every opportunity.
Consider this an ambush?
I'm not talking about you, but I'm talking about if there is normally normally when you find some type of problem wrong with the property, you notify the property owner and you try to resolve it. This could have been resolved prior to coming to this hearing, as it always has been when there is a property issue in reference to conditions of code violations. They could have simply come to me. They have each one of these people have my number to contact me, and we could have I could have gotten this taken care of. I'm not going to try to avoid the issue. You know, my point is, you don't have to bring me here to get this. You know, if you had notified me about this condition and I don't do anything about it, then you have every right to bring me before this board to do that. And I've never tried to avoid dealing with these issues.
That's where you and I disagree. I don't agree that your obligation to maintain your property doesn't start until the city notifies you that there's a problem.
Well, that's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying that's when my obligation begins. What I'm saying is, I'm not saying that's when my obligation begins when the city notifies me. I'm not saying that's when my obligation begins. I agree with you. You know, I'm not going to try to shuck around the issues. I agree with you that my obligation begins. Basically, if I own the property, I have an obligation to maintain the property, whether I rent it, whether I manufacture rental agreements that say the tenant is responsible for maintaining it, and I do something else, I still have an obligation to make sure that the property is maintained, period. I understand that. I respect that. I respect the fact that the city has an obligation to make sure that properties are into code. I respect that as well. But what I'm saying is, if I don't know about it, regardless of whether I have a responsibility to know about it, but if I don't know about it, because I'm human and I don't live on the property, but if I don't know about it and the city subsequently finds out about it, notify me so I can take care of it. You know, don't just simply, and when I say an ambush, don't just simply bring me before the board without giving me proper notification so I can take care of it, because then it seems as if I am aware of this and I just blatantly disregarded it to the point that it had to come before the magistrate. And that's not the case in this particular case. In this particular case, had they made me aware of this, these people, if that is in that condition, these people have been living in that condition. They've been willingly living in that condition. And they're not. It's not as if they're telling me, look, the property is in this condition, can you fix it or will you fix it? Because they know that their lease says that you don't have to pay lights, you don't have to pay water, you don't have to pay cable, I'm going to pay that, but you maintain the property. So they're trying to get around not maintaining the property, but I still pay the lights and the water and all of that, but then trying to force you guys to force me to maintain the property when they know that they're getting that special consideration of not paying the lights and water in order to keep it fixed. So, you know, that's my point. Give me the opportunity.
Mr. Williams, here's my point. I've been around the block. You're not the first owner who's been mistreated by a tenant. I'm not angry about anything. I'm only interested
in getting this into compliance.
Now, bring it into compliance.
Right. I will get this in compliance.
You're not prejudiced by what's happened up to this point in time. I know our inspectors come down here and they air out their exasperation as to why things weren't done faster, sooner, and all that stuff. And that goes into the mix. When it comes to a determination as to what needs to be done, I usually preserve my anger for the people that don't comply with what I've asked them to do, because when it reaches this point, I'm only interested in the solution. I'm not as interested in how we got there. I'm just interested in the solution. And I'm familiar with property owners who get mistreated by tenants. That's not an uncommon occurrence. And I don't hold bad tenants against the property owner. And I agree with you. Whoever continued to live in those conditions must have had a very low lifestyle threshold. And I can understand how they wouldn't be bringing it to your attention had they treated your property in that manner. I understand all of that. So the only thing I'm interested in now, once we're all done being exasperated and angry, is what we need to do to come into compliance.
Well, obviously, I need to get this situation taken care of and get it fixed and get it repaired. And it's obvious that the tenant that's living there is not going to do it, because had they intended on doing it, they would have notified me and not notified you guys. So I'm going to have to get these people out of here. But in the meantime, I'm going to see, before I even go through the process of evicting them, I'm going to see whether or not they'll allow me to come in and repair this stuff. So in other words, I'm not asking you to say, you know what, it's going to be a long, drawn-out effort for me to evict somebody, so wait for me to evict somebody before you come back in to inspect. I just simply say, give me a reasonable amount of time that I can take care and get these repairs done, And in the meantime, I'll still be doing an eviction proceeding with these people, because it's obvious to me that they don't have any intent of keeping the property up to code. So even before I get these people evicted, the only thing I would have to do is give them proper notice that someone is going, you know, that the city is going to come in to inspect. You understand what I'm saying? So we don't have to wait for the actual eviction to come back in to inspect to make sure that these things have been taken care of. Just give me a opportunity, a reasonable opportunity to take care of these and get these particular tenants out of there. And I think that's a fair solution, irregardless of the fact of the notice problems. Because, like I said, this is a new year, and I'm actually trying to sell the property, but that's a whole other issue. This is a new year. I don't have time to be going back and forth with the city on these things. If the property needs to be taken care of, I want to take care of it, but I just also want to be treated fairly, too. There's a process by which one comes before this board. You know, you have to give proper notice, and I want that.
You're slipping backwards. We were making some progress there for a minute. So now the question becomes, what, in your opinion, would be a reasonable amount of time for you to bring the property into compliance, taking into consideration the fact that you may have to evict the tenant in order to complete the repairs?
I would defer and ask. I don't know who I'm necessarily dealing with, because I think I have three individuals here that I'm dealing with. I don't know who's...
Mr. Inspector, do you have an opinion as to how long it would take to bring the property?
Considering what we've seen here, and it looks like it's some substantial work that's going to have to be done, I would defer to Mr. Sykes and say, you know, can you work with me here and give me a reasonable amount of time? What do you think we can get this stuff taken care of?
On the 16th, when these photos were taken, I wasn't present, but I did go back by when I posted the property for this meeting, and I did see the outside storage. So that can be removed within 10 days. Mm-hmm. Now, as far as the interior and what's going on, I have to defer that to Code Officer Stinson, who actually enters the property.
All the pictures that you're seeing right now, Mr. Kelja, I took on that date. I responded to that location per the police department. There were two officers on scene.
No, I'm going to object. My understanding is that you stopped me and said, let's get to the bottom of this. When can this stuff...
Even heard this yet.
Well, you stopped me from basically putting up some type of defense and said, look, at this stage we're dealing with trying to get this resolved. So we're inquiring as to how long do we think that it's going to take to get this taken care of. Now, if we're going to go back into when you responded and what happened and what got to this point, then let's go back to the notice, not proper notice, and then I'll get my court reporter. Well, I guess she's already going, and I'm glad she's going. If you want to do that, then let's go ahead and do that, because I don't have time to play games. If we're going to do it fairly and correctly, or we're going to get to the bottom of this, let's get to the bottom of it. I'm already telling you that I will get this property into compliance. You suggested that what time period is it going to take to do that?
The presence of the officers, or however it is you came to be at the property, have any particular relevance as far as how much time it would take to come into compliance? Or are you just trying to give me some history?
No relevance, just history.
All right. Now, that having been said, and I appreciate that, how much time do you think it should take to bring the property into compliance?
Next cut.
That looks like an awful lot of work to be done by the next cut. So could you explain the rationale for that one to me?
I would have to dive into the history then.
Okay, are we having tenant complaints?
Yes. That's how I appeared on the property on that particular day. This has been an ongoing issue, ultimately. These particular violations on this particular day existed on that particular day. But these and prior cases, which I know have no relevance here, have contributed to the condition of this property.
Okay, I appreciate that. Now let's focus on this property and the conditions you observe. And all I'm asking you for is your opinion. Forget the history. It's a new day. It's day one as far as I'm concerned. I understand you folks out there in the street are dealing with all this stuff routinely. Okay, and I understand that you may be frustrated because things don't happen. But that having been said, now it's a case in front of me, so it's basically day one, and I can't order the man to do something that's unreasonable. And no matter how egregious the conduct may have been prior to us arriving at this point, my question I'm supposed to ask, and you correct me if I'm wrong, Counselor, is how much time should reasonably be required to bring the conditions that you observed into compliance. Looking to me like at least 90 days worth of work.
I have to defer to the magistrate on how long it's going to take.
All right, Mr. Williams, how long do you think it's going to take to come into compliance?
I would request about 120 days to do it, notwithstanding the fact that I'm going to be doing an eviction. But what I'm asking the magistrate to understand is that I'm not requesting the magistrate to wait until I have an actual order of eviction in order to come into compliance. I'm just simply saying that one of the processes that's going to take place is an eviction. And in doing so, I will be working with the tenant to repair these.
All right, now, let me tell you how this game is being played right now. The respondent has now answered my question. He's come up with 120 days. I'm not hearing anyone suggesting anything to the contrary. So if I don't hear anybody say anything to the contrary, then his 120-day testimony is going to trump the non-answer I've been getting. So one last
days.
Time. You think 60 days. Okay.
Mr. Petrosia?
Yes.
On that date, it is our understanding that the tenant moved out. I personally helped her.
Okay.
So
the tenant should be a non-issue.
Correct.
All right.
That I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And it's your opinion 60 days should get the job done?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And it's your opinion 120 days is required to get the job done?
Not only 120 days, I would the testimony from the officer that the tenant has moved out of there, that is false.
I don't care about that.
Well, that's significant if we're talking.
It's a week to get a tenant out. Isn't that about how long it takes to evict the tenant?
Well, you can evict the tenant for non-payment for about a week, and if they don't supply the deposit.
If that becomes a problem that keeps you from coming into compliance, I'll take that into consideration if you don't meet your compliance date.
Well, I don't think that.
I typically do.
Well, I don't think that
all
the tenant.
All of a sudden, you're going to say, "Dear Mr. Magistrate, I'm sorry to advise, but I'm dealing with the tenant from hell here, and now we're all in front of the Florida Supreme Court, and I can't get in there to do the repairs." And I'll certainly take that into consideration.
Well, and I've already told you that as far as this tenant is concerned, I don't think that the tenant will hold up any repair while I'm trying to evict them.
You did, so. He says 60 days, you say 120 days. Is that right?
Yes, considering what we see here.
Now, is the property currently occupied or not? Because that impacts the analysis.
The property is currently occupied, and.
Okay, I don't want you to argue with anybody, so you're telling me the property's occupied?
Yes. And I'm under oath. Now, if someone wants to be sworn in under oath to say that this property is not occupied, you're more than willing to do it.
Well, you know, the thing about it is you've already told me the occupation of this property by this tenant isn't going to keep you from doing the repairs. So whether it's occupied or not, from what I'm hearing you tell me, is irrelevant.
Right, because I would assume that if a tenant called them and saying that the property is not in repair, then they obviously shouldn't have a problem with it being repaired. They just didn't tell me.
All right, are there any life safety issues that we're dealing with here?
Well, as a rental property, I did not view any working smoke detectors in there. The kitchen, I'm not qualified to say if it was a life safety issue, but I wouldn't feel comfortable operating in the kitchen.
If we got a comprehensive list of things that need to be done, or is this it, and are we clear on what needs to be done?
Can we get a long form on that? We got a long form on that?
No.
Or just all the itemized?
Just itemized. Okay, well then it looks as though we're working with this, and if you have any questions as far as what needs to be done, you need to ask your inspectors. I'm going to go ahead and order the respondent to be in compliance by May 5, 2010. That's just about your 120 days there. Now, having allowed you all the time that you've asked for, I expect this property to be in compliance by May 5. And from what I'm hearing, the tenant shouldn't be an obstacle or a problem.
Right. I agree. I'm sorry.
Excuse me, Mr.
I'm not sure you found him in non-compliance.
Okay. I'm finding the respondent in non-compliance. I'm ordering the respondent to commit to compliance by May 5, 2010, or be referred or be returned to the special magistrate for consideration of a fine of up to $1,000 per day thereafter. Now, I'm giving you 120 days just for your information, because from what I'm seeing in these photographs, I think you're going to need every bit of it.
Okay? I agree.
Now, that's not really a good thing, but my point is, I'm formulating the opinion that it's going to take you every bit of that time in order to bring this property into compliance. So, that having been said, you've got till May 5th. Good luck to you. And if there are any catastrophic, and they need to be catastrophic events to keep you from being able to come into compliance by May 5th of 2010, please be sure to share them with your inspector.
And I would like to find out, because it looks like I have an army of people that I'm dealing with here, so I would like to know who do I need to be in contact with in reference to this.
It would surprise me if there were multiple inspectors that you had to deal with, because I can see a variety of violations.
Right, but usually there is one inspector assigned to a property, so I would like to know so there won't be an issue as to I didn't know who to contact or who.
You guys got a point man you want to appoint?
Contact me.
Okay.
Okay, very good.
Mr. Scalzo, I'd like to suggest progress report in 60 days at least.
Not a bad idea. Not a bad idea. I'm also going to order that we have a progress report on this matter on March 9 of 2010. And the purpose of the progress report is just that. I want to know how we're doing. I want to know if we're on track for May. If it's going too slow, we're going to let you know. If you're on track, great. But let me hasten to add, that is our standard procedure whenever we consider the length of time that I've allowed you.
Well, I'm not going to object to a progress report. I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem with keeping the inspectors up to date. I don't really don't see the need to come back before the magistrate. As far as because it's almost as if it's a dual. I'm keeping the inspectors up to date on the progress, and then I'm coming back before the magistrate doing the same thing. It's almost as if it's overlapping, because that's extra expense to me, because when I come before the magistrate, I'm bringing a court reporter along, so I'm going to have to pay fees for a court reporter just to tell the magistrate the same thing that I'm telling that I'm keeping the inspectors up to date on. I mean, I think that's a redundant and a overlapping issue.
Okay, I hear you. We're going to have a progress report on March 9, 2010. If you don't want to attend, that's your choice. But we're going to have a progress report so I can hear, hopefully from both sides, what the status of these efforts are to come into compliance. Because I don't allow that much time and then wait 120 days just to find out that I've got a respondent that hasn't done anything over those 120 days and then says, well, give me another 6 months now.
Well, I think that
at that point I'll say no.
Right, I think that the magistrate has the authority. If someone was to come in after 4 months and say they haven't done anything, I think the magistrate has the authority to render whatever decision he deems appropriate. But if you want to order a progress report, if you want that same money I could be spending for a court reporter, I could be putting into getting this property in order. But if you're going to
that's your choice. We're going to have a progress report on March 9th.
And at the same time, I just want to make sure that the magistrate knows that I still intend to reserve all issues as far as notice or lack of due notice in this case as well. But my main intent is to get this property in compliance with these violations, although I still feel I wasn't properly notified. But that's not even an issue. I mean, that's not the main issue. The main issue is getting this property in compliance. But I still don't appreciate being, as I termed it, ambushed with lack of proper notification in this proceeding. But I will see you, and I'm sorry, what was that date of the...
March 9th. That's the meeting at which we'll hear the progress report.
March 9th, and there's a reason for procedure. There, just like you're here and you're doing the procedure, there's a reason for a proper procedure, and it's not put into the statutes just for the heck of it. It's there for a reason, for due process, and that's all I request and ask. Just like a tenant needs to get due process, I request and I respect to have due process to deal with these matters as opposed to just being ambushed. I don't think the city has to resort to this type of trickery in order to maintain their code. And that's my point. And I don't have a problem with getting these things in order, but you can certainly contact me, let me know what's going on, and I'll take care of the problems. And that's my initial point. Don't violate certain rules and then demand that I basically adhere to other rules. You know, let's be fair across the board, and that's basically the point I want to get across. I think for the purposes of you, Mr. Vicalja, I think that you've been fair, and I have called you out when I thought you haven't been fair. But I think that you've been fair in this particular proceeding because it's not your job to do the proper notification. It's the city. And I do have an issue with that, and I'm going to always express when I have an issue about it. But I think I agree with what you said. The ultimate goal is to get this property into compliance, and I will do just that.
Good luck to you. Case number 21, Halifax Wrecking Company Incorporated.
Morning, Mr. President.
Good morning.
Thanks.
Wow, this is a chunk of that.
I have a notice of appearance.
Yeah, on each case. There are six or seven cases that are pending.
I filed a notice of appearance on each case. I'm not sure yet. You might as well swear them in just in case.
Okay. Clint,
B-L-E-N-K.
Andrew Homer, H-O-H-N-E.
Raise your right hand.
I'm very used. Good to meet you.
Okay, let's back up. And before we get started, let me ask a few preliminary questions. I see the cases 21, 22, 23, 24. Hold on. 21, 22, and 23 have to do with Halifax Wrecking Company Incorporated. I am familiar with Mr. Klank. Is there also some nexus between Mr. Klank and Halifax Wrecking Company Incorporated with Halifax Reclamation Inc.?
Yes, sir.
And what's that?
Mr. Klank, I believe, is either the owner of the shares of stock of Halifax Reclamation or his wife is. I'm not sure how that was issued.
Okay. And then I see, so I have cases 24 and 25 with Halifax Reclamation Inc., and then cases 26 and 27. Mr. Klink, individually. Now, let me ask the city to appoint a spokesperson. And before we get into this, and I'm not going to short trip anyone of their opportunity to talk, can someone just give me an overview as to what we're about to get into? Because I see a lot of cases with with at least one core party.
And, Your Honor, I'm going to request an extension of time, and I don't mind them giving an overview of what we're looking at, but this is a fairly complex case.
You give me the overview. Just tell me generally what's the beef here.
My client has been in business for 32 years, operating on Marion Street. This matter has been before the board, as I understand it, back in the year 2000. I learned that in a records production yesterday, although Mr. Klank was aware of the prior proceedings. It appears that he's been operating his demolition business at the site and that at other adjoining sites on Marion Street, on Loomis, and
Wallace or something?
Yeah, Wallace. There are numerous sites that are there. Some of the uses have been expanded. Some are contracted. My point is we just need to learn. I need some time to investigate what are the permitted uses. There are certain violations that are in existence that I believe have been corrected. There are such as some storage of some debris, although all debris has not been removed. There are certain violations which can be corrected relatively quickly, such as painting a wall and putting numbers on signs and repairing fences. But I need to determine in some time to research what properties have been previously cited, what has been the result of those citations, what property has been added and which is subtracted, which uses may or may not be grandfathered in over the 32 years, because there's been an extensive history on this property. So we're not prepared to go forward to determine and admit compliance or non-compliance, because I just haven't had time to research the issues. He was first cited with this in the end of November, with regard to these allegations, the end of November, beginning of December. The notice of hearing was posted on his door on New Year's Eve. He picked up the notice on the Monday following New Year's Eve, which would have been January 4th, and contacted me. Since that time, I've done a record production at the city of Daytona Beach. They required a deposit. I paid the deposit on the day they requested it. I got records yesterday at about 3 o'clock, and I haven't had time to go through those records. I met with my client this morning, and he's given me 3 file folders of documents, which I have not had time to go through. Notwithstanding all of that, we do recognize that there needs to be some action taken on this property by Mr. Klank. So with regard to that, I do have a CD of photographs that we've taken. I haven't seen the city's photographs, but there are certain actions taken to clean up the property of what we believe violations are, and make some progress. And we're not going to be bringing – this had been an ongoing business, and there had been some demolition debris brought back to the property. We're not going to bring any more demolition debris while we're working on this. Anything that happens, we're going to be cleaning up the property and removing. We just need an opportunity to identify that which we have to do, and then form a reasonable period of time to bring us in compliance with the areas that we believe we're in compliance in, or need to bring ourselves in compliance. And then if we have an issue with the city on what where they believe we're in non-compliance and we believe that we are in compliance, then schedule a hearing on those things. I just need time. There are 7 cases. This has been going on for many, many years. We had previously had an issue with the city or the county of Volusia approximately 8 years ago, maybe 7 years ago. That property was brought into or annexed into the city of South Daytona. Mr. Klank did resolve those issues and bring that property into compliance and has a good working relationship with the city of South Daytona. And I believe that we can do the same with regard to the city of Daytona Beach. But there's a lot here.
Okay, you had mentioned a few things that you had indicated were going to be discontinued as we go forward with this process.
Correct, Your Honor.
What were they again?
He demolishes houses for that. That's the occupation of Halifax Wrecking, and most of the debris is brought to the landfill, but certain of the debris was brought back to the premises and sorted out, and then the things that you couldn't salvage was brought out to the landfill. Those things that could be salvaged were salvaged and I'm assuming transferred to some other entity or used in some other manner.
Hold on a second. Mr. Klink, do you do roofs?
His brother does.
No, my brother does. Has a roofing company.
I think my wife was just talking to someone named Klink about putting a roof on my brother's house. Okay, well, I guess I just need to let the city know that. I mean, we haven't entered into any agreement. I do need to get back with them, and I haven't yet, but... okay, so that's where I know the name.
Right.
All right, so city, my wife's been in touch with his brother, I guess,
yes,
about the prospect of putting a roof, and we will be putting the roof on at some point, on my brother's house on Morningside. I'm just airing that out, so if that creates any kind of a conflict and anybody concerns anybody, I just need to let you all know now.
Speak on behalf of the city and Mr. Kelly, so I don't see a conflict and to whatever extent it may possibly appear having an appearance of a conflict. You've been more than fair. We've dealt with you over many years, so we're confident that you'll be not prejudiced by whatever involvement you have.
All right, fair enough. Okay, now...
We would express that we do not have a concern regarding your continuing to be involved in this matter either on that.
Mr. Hughes has indicated that we've got a lot here, and quite frankly, just at first blush, it would appear as though we've got a lot. And it looks as though this is something that, as far as our process is concerned, is relatively fresh. And I'm talking about December 4th, 2009,
from what I'm looking at. I understand there may be history, but as far as this process is concerned, it looks like it's relatively recent. Are you going to be up to snuff by the next meeting were I to entertain this extension request?
And that would be February 8th, I believe, was the date you were putting out there?
February 9th.
I prefer 60 days, but if you want 30 days, I'll be reasonably close. If I can't, then...
Let's talk to the city for a while. All right. The respondent has requested an extension of time. Are all of these cases interrelated?
I believe so.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So we've got some 7 or 8 cases here that I'm told are interrelated, notwithstanding that the owner has been different. And Mr. Hughes has indicated there's a fair amount of historical analysis to be done to enable him to be able to respond and formulate, I guess, a plan, so to speak, as far as what needs to be done.
Well, identify where we agree and disagree with the city, because we may disagree in certain areas. And that's why I don't want to go through with
Mr. Hughes is requesting 60 days or until March 9th for us to resume this hearing. What say the city to that?
Mr. Bukowski, the finding of compliance and non-compliance is really just to establish the jurisdiction of the magistrate. Each one of these cases, the matters which are cited for each one individually, can easily determine from a review of the paperwork and an inspection of property by Mr. Hughes, whether or not they're in compliance or non-compliance. I agree with him fully that he should have an opportunity to look at the past documents to see if he has grandfather issues, if he wants to raise those on the other issues. I believe that 30 days, or at least till the February 3rd date, would be more than enough time, seeing that he's indicated he's received documents that he sought and have those available. There's a long history with, as Mr. Clinton, with Ms. Clinton, Mr. Honor, and with these properties. They're all, the nature of what's being complained about is similar and consistent. We're here, I don't want to say primarily, but part of the reason we're here is involves residential complaints. And we'd like to make sure that it's moving forward, and we appreciate what Mr. Hughes says in regards to the points of not making the problem any worse in the sense of adding any more to the properties or doing any of more of the and I'm sorry, probably address this in other situations, any more of the moving or front loading or those types of things that may be going on those properties. But we'd like to, I think I've just briefly mentioned to the inspector, I think that he's okay with us continuing to the next meeting, but I think 60 days is excessive in terms of I understand the need to start planning for a plan for improvement and resolving the violations, but beyond that, I think the determination of compliance and non-compliance can be made within the next by the next meeting and the review of those paperwork will be a reasonable time.
I think it gets even more complicated. And do you mind if I just look at your picture, sir, and show the magistrate your picture? Thanks. But
that's one of them, and this is the other.
Okay. It's just difficult determining which cases apply to which property because the boundaries on the properties aren't carefully defined. So we have different cases with different properties, and it's hard to even define which violations apply to which property.
I gave you this, but I labeled each parcel with the case number.
Well, that would be helpful.
I think I gave you one of those in there.
I didn't have a chance to go through that whole package that I got. Honestly, sorry, I got it at 3:30, and it's. But if you did, that would be helpful. But, you know, I even have trouble identifying which parcels apply to which violation because it's the same violations that are going across, but you have to determine, well, okay, in this particular case, in case number 13, this parcel applies. We brought that one into compliance. Then maybe we didn't do 14 because they're all interrelated. The properties are all tied together.
I might add that it's going to be nearly impossible to bring any one parcel into compliance. There's no fence between them. It's two separate entities, pretty much, each of which is made up of contiguous parcels, multiple, and one has no building at all, so it's really a vacant lot. And the other one, we could say that it has a building. I'm not sure how they didn't combine the property, but they're contiguous, and one parcel has a building, so we could say one of them has a building. but the other one doesn't. And it would be pretty much one of those cases on there could be put into compliance on its own because it was minor. It was just maintaining the building. The rest are interlocked. Well, two separate cases. Each of those cases is interlocked with itself. And it's like one big piece of property with the same thing over the whole property, which is, you know, storage and landfill. What looks like a landfill operation, not necessarily.
And, Your Honor, from my standpoint, what I intend to do in trying to get some organization into this is I was intended to contact Mr. Gish and hopefully Mr. Jackson and meet with them at the property so we can identify, well, okay, this is this particular case, this particular property, where do we need to go and what's reasonable, and then come up with some sort of organized resolution, identify where we're compliant, where we're not compliant, what applies to us, what doesn't, and then come up with a solution to it that the city can live with and that Mr. Klank can live with.
I think at the very least, Mr. Kelger, we could lighten the load if we came back on the next meeting. If we did not have all properties identified, at least deal with the ones we have identified and bring this to some, know which ones are resolved, if they are resolved, or if it needs to be resolved. And so I think delaying it until...
He's correct where we would certainly lighten the load. Right now it's just an overwhelming mess.
Okay. Well, it sounds like I'm going to have to... just dive in. All right, let me ask some questions here. We're not going to get into all of it today. These are only questions. Anyone is welcome to answer them or not answer them. They're not going to be prejudiced one way or the other. I'm looking at SMG01-10-12, and it says, operating a salvage/recycling facility without meeting the conditions of conditional use. And then it continues on, and I don't understand the punctuation. It says, without building, without pavement, with outside storage. Can somebody explain to me what that means?
It's a vacant lot being used as a business.
Can I look at your thing, sir?
Being used as what kind of business?
It looks like a salvage business.
I mean, is this a vacant lot that's just covered up with stuff?
Yeah, there's a... It looks like that aerial photo, pretty much. That's from a couple
Everything
years
inside
ago.
The red lines?
Correct. The blue line is one case. The red line was another case, and then each of those white ones was a parcel that they divided up in all those different...
With regard to this case, SMG01-10-12, which
that's
block
the blue
am I
one.
Looking at?
The one that's got blue on it.
Blue. So that's supposed to be just vacant property?
It has no building, so it's a vacant lot.
It's a vacant lot. It's been operated as a salvage recycling facility without meeting the conditions of the conditional use?
That's what it looks like, yes. It has no... to have a salvage, if you had a license, which they don't, they would need a building, they would need pavement, they would need
provide for
landscaping, they would need some kind of fence.
So you're saying we got a vacant lot, they've just basically incorporated into their operations.
Right, right.
Okay.
If I may, sir, this extends back, as Mr. Hughes said, for well over 10 years, and there is an issue of grandfathering. Mr. Hughes has a lot of digging to do. I've been with the company for at least that long, and I know of all of the issues. I haven't been able to bring them up to date as to what they are. However, when they say they're not in compliance, it's what Mr. Plank has been doing over a long period of time on that premises for his business as Halifax Wrecking. So to say he's running a salvage, recycling, landfill operation is incorrect and inaccurate.
Okay. And again, I'm going to let everyone be heard. I'm just trying to understand the geography and the nature of the complaint, for starters. I don't doubt the respondent's going to have defenses. Okay, I'm looking at the 13 case.
Okay, that's... It's part of that same group.
Which one is it? I'm sorry, sir. Yeah, it's whatever way you want to do it. There's 13, I think.
13. Okay. Well, I don't know how I can point it out to you from down here, but if you look at the right, it's the rectangle on the right at the bottom. Barbara, can you move it? Can you put your arrow right there? Can you see where she put the arrow?
Yeah, well, I've got your map right here that's attached to the
top. Oh, okay.
The bar is
quick. Which one?
I think he's looking at this one right here.
That's 13.
Okay.
Where's Burke's property?
It's not even on here.
Yeah.
I don't know where.
See, I'm having trouble following this because this is an older picture, and I've always gone off. There's a warehouse across the street from Mr. Clank's main property.
This is all Lumet's property.
Yeah, here's Wallen. This is, here's Marion.
Yeah.
There's the houses.
Okay.
This is pretty much vacant. This guy owns it.
Okay, yeah. So this is all Loomis property.
This is the driveway. This is okay. Wallace. There's the driveway. And then they use that from this driveway, and then they get in here.
Okay, now where we're at.
Driveway. This is Loomis, and they don't really use this side because there's a ditch here, and I don't think you drive over that. Do you have a driveway on this side?
I don't think.
This is the train track.
I got that one.
That's the city park.
Sorry.
In my demolition business, this area here is more or less, I have over 300 dumpsters in my demolition business.
Yeah, Mr. Clint, you might just want to hold on.
Yeah, I should.
Okay, this is going to be complicated.
Yes.
I really don't want anybody stumbling into things they don't need to be stumbling into.
Okay.
So please. With all due respect, you might just want to.
Thank you, sir.
And again, I mean no disrespect.
But they said this is all one property.
How old are these pictures, you think? How old are these pictures?
Okay, I guess last question, because we're definitely not going to resolve all these today. I'm just trying to get a feel for what we are talking about, and I think I do, is what are the zoning issues that we're going to be confronted with? Or let me rephrase that. Are there zoning issues that we're going to be confronted with?
Well, they have to, if they do operate a business there, it has to be operated in compliance with all the requirements of the zoning. And they could have a reclamation, they have a reclamation type operation there if they fulfill the obligations for that operation. And of course, utmost and foremost would be get an occupational license, which they don't have.
I believe there's been review and plans and considerations for use, at least on the primary property. And I think as Mr. Hughes does this research, he'll find that. And so there's things that have some element of compliance criteria, but the position that the city has is that it's not in compliance. In a form that is being used and to the extent it's being used right now.
This is Zone M1, which when Mr. Clint began to use it was designated business heavy industrial. It has now changed because of the land development code and the ordinances. It is light industrial. They've changed ordinance and land development code to make it such that his type of business, as they're referring to it as here in this court, is now recycling and salvaging, which would make it M5 and relocate it to another area of the city. So, again, the grandfathering issue is a major condition that we need to delve into further in order to present our case. You see, sir, there are other companies in the area near vicinity that do the same types of things, not recycling, but outdoor storage, for example, that are grandfathered in as well.
Mr. Gutierrez, you don't get grandfathered until you get a lawful use. And so
M1 was lawful when we originally used.
These are the issues we have to research.
The point is, this issue is going to have to be resolved before the respondent's even in a position to be able to determine whether he's going to say he's in compliance or non-compliance.
Possibly on one property or another, I don't think on everything.
Well, I'm seeing a lot of common allegations made throughout all of these cases.
So whatever you choose to do, this
No, I mean, I'm alerting the city to some things that they may want to look at. I'm seeing a lot of common allegations throughout. And what I'm basically hearing is that there's a determination to be made at the outset as far as whether this property, I guess, is subject to the current zoning. And if it is not, then they're going to say they're not going to agree to comply. compliance. No, they're going to say they are in compliance. And if it is, then there's going to be a determination to be made as far as non-compliance. And to be perfectly honest, at first blush, looking at this property, knowing how long it's been around, and knowing how long it's, whatever's been happening on there, I can understand how that could get a little complicated. So that, but to be perfectly honest, as I'm thinking about it, I guess the question that I need to know, or that is the answer for the argument that I'm primarily interested in. So the question now becomes, how long is it going to take you to get ready to argue that? I can see, someone can bring me photographs of broken fences and cars parked and weeds that need to be cut. I don't need 60 days to prepare for that. So I guess the question is, how much time is reasonably going to be required for you to prepare for the zoning, for the argument that you want to make?
I think 60 days. I think I can do it in 60. And we are bringing the other areas into compliance. We are removing items. We are mowing down weeds, removing some piles of soil. We are doing those things. I do have photos of that on a CD that we can plug in if you want.
Okay. So you're telling me efforts to come into compliance to a certain extent are underway already.
Yes.
You're certainly not doing any work without permits. And you're certainly not doing any work that would constitute a waiver to the arguments that you're trying to preserve. And that you're wanting 60 days to prepare so that you can argue your case to me as to whether or not, as to what zoning you're actually subject to.
Correct.
And then the city's going to come back and, I guess, respond to that.
Yeah. Excuse me. I'm dry out. I didn't get the water. Mr. Kelcher, I guess the only, and I understand your point there, and I understand the issue. To me, it seems like just a question of the extent of non-compliance, not really a question of whether you're in compliance. And still going to the whole question of what they will need to do to come into compliance. But again, if in good faith they're working towards resolving the issues right now, That's the principal concern, I think, of the city, that they're working towards resolving those things that everyone can agree need to be resolved. And beyond that, we'll...
And to touch on what Mr. Jackson's saying, and that's why I pointed out the issue with regard to the county of Volusia and South Daytona, is that we had some issues there. We identified what those issues are, and we resolved those issues and seemed to have a good relationship with South Daytona where that property is located. So... that is our effort to come into compliance and be in agreement with the city and do it in a reasonable manner.
But it was a hard push for, again, South Daytona.
But once I got involved, we did straighten it all out.
I understand. Okay.
Yes.
Point made.
Okay, well, I understand what Mr. Jackson's saying. What Mr. Jackson's saying is you don't have to have, you know, every item here in non-compliance, as long as it's determined that something's in non-compliance, that you're in non-compliance. And I agree with you in that regard. But having said that, I can see already that the pivotal issue here is going to be the zoning of this property, because that's going to have huge ramifications. And while I could gloss over that issue and lump it in with everything else and determine right now that they're in non-compliance, I'm not inclined to do that. For some reason, I don't feel comfortable doing that. So, we're going to continue the matter 60 days to March 9, 2010. Now, if this is going to be a involved hearing that we may require a special setting for, let me know. Because with all the people I see out here and all the manpower I see assembled, I can see this taking more time than may be required on our regular agenda. So, if anyone is thinking that it might be prudent to put this on a special setting, please let me know.
Your Honor, can I point something else out? And I'm not raising this as an objection, but I did get some paperwork from the city yesterday afternoon, and then glossing over it, there was a code enforcement board hearing that occurred in year 2000, and you recused yourself from that. Now, I don't have any objection to your continuing, but you did recuse yourself back in 2000. I have no idea why. I asked Mr. Clank, and he indicated he had no idea why. I certainly have no objection to your continuing. You're just going to rule on the facts, and I understand.
The only thing I can think of is that I met Mr. Klink over at Pierre Cortamanche's and Carol Boyd's house one time. But that's been about 7 years ago, and I haven't seen him since.
So okay, I didn't know why, and I...
The only thing I could think of, aside from sharing a steak with him, that was the end of the relationship.
Okay.
For the record, sir, may I request that the pictures that have been shown...
We can get those.
...be noted that they were dated on the November 17th and November 10th, and that the re-inspections that were indicated upon the records by the city... reflect anything that happened after that
date. Well, that's fine. Again, I'm more interested in current events and going forward than anything else.
Are you combining all these cases in one order?
Well,
you're continuing all of the cases, ruling on who wants to bring 21 through the photos.
I'm continuing all of
them. I don't know if there's a place to put a CD.
Well, hang on a second. Is this zoning issue pertinent to every case that remains here, cases 21 through 27?
I'm sorry, sir. I didn't hear the question. I was speaking with
you. There's one case that they could solve by just painting the building. The number in that case is
27?
Yeah. 18. It's 327 is the address. The case number is SMG011018.
And
that building would...
Okay, I'm going to continue them all. I would urge the respondent to do what you can to clean up the junk so we can focus on the serious issues here. And as I understand it, the serious issues are going to be my determination as far as what zoning is going to apply to the case when we then discuss whether or not you're in compliance or non-compliance. And again, Tony, I recognize and you're right, but I could hold them in non-compliance right now because they needed to cut the grass or something like that. But this is a big enough property, it's an old enough property, it's been established long enough, the business has been around long enough. This case merits some attention, and I wouldn't want any of the analysis prejudiced by some suspicion, if you will, that they've already been partially found to be in non-compliance before we have let them have their opportunity to speak to that issue. Okay, that's it. So we'll see everybody on March 9, 2010.
Thank you.
Did you need anything else in here? Okay. And let me reiterate that if this is going to shape up to be a war, and we're going to be hearing extended testimony from multiple witnesses, then you might want to consider a special setting at or about March 9. I'm not talking about putting this off even further. I'm just talking about or planning on putting this at the end of the agenda and just let me know that so I can plan on staying as long as it takes in order to get the thing heard.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, I like that idea better. So let's keep it on the March 9th agenda. You might just want to plan right now on putting it last because it might get late.
Okay.
That it?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Have a great day.
Good luck, y'all. All right.
That's if you want to bring the photos. I don't see a speaker down there. If you want to.
Yeah, any other business would be brought before the special magistrate.
There could be one. I just don't see it.
We had the workshop. Well, we had the code workshop, and we also had the workshop with the commission. And I know you had said. Tell you about that, and I hope you realize what's coming. Amy and I talked about that the day after. I don't know if you saw it in the newspaper, some comments.
$16 million worth of bills out there.
Yeah.
So should be out there collecting.
Right. More of the comments of.
It's worth about as much as Monopoly money. It's pretty much irrelevant.
Right. One of the things that did come up and was something that we had talked about before. Well, couple of things. One of them is the amnesty program, and so we laid that out to the commission, and that's something they want to do, and they still have to work a couple of things out in terms of how much time and what the fines would be and those types of things. I think they want me to put together some type of a procedure for proceeding with it, applying it. But I expect that that's something that we probably will be doing is an amnesty program. Also, We also talked about capping the fines and exactly how we want to go about that. We haven't really talked, we haven't figured that out yet. There's various things that's happening in various jurisdictions. Some of them, like even in the surrounding jurisdictions, I think one of them capped them at $5,000, and then when they reach $5,000, then they come back. Is that kind of what they said? Yeah. Then they come back, and then they go until it reaches another $5,000, then they come back again if they feel they need to come back. But there's various things that can be done. And so we're looking at the manner in which we would like to cap them, or the suggestions of capping them to the property value is one. Quite honestly, and I think, well, you were there through the period when we used to cap them, the co-board would come back and review them and unilaterally reduce the liens to or cap them at the property values or percentage of the property value. I was one when I came in and said, well, you know, high economic times, we had many investors with a whole lot of properties owned. We had a specific issue even with Ms. Klink where multiple properties owned, and it seemed to have some benefit to know that you could continue fine until you affected something beyond the property that was the subject of a violation, so that when the multi-property owner ignored you and ignored the property of violation, that you still had some teeth. And so that's kind of what was my mindset in saying, well, these are general liens. Capping them just limits it to this lot that's offensive, even though they have 15 properties all over town. And so we stopped capping, basically. And no policy. It wasn't really policy why we capped. There wasn't any policy why we stopped. So we're at the point now where we're considering that, thinking it's a good idea to probably, especially as we look at the true value of the means and ability to go forward, this an understanding that we may be more persuasive in the courts when we go forward for foreclosure, when we're talking about liens, that they can mentally place a true association to the property and not something so large that it doesn't really, it goes far over and beyond the violation. So that's one of the things that became part of the discussion. I've just discussed it probably a bit more than we talked about it at the meeting, but that's the whole gist of it. So just wanted to inform you. I'll look for some input as we...
I'll give it to you now. I have told a number of people over the years that they need to do something about this accumulation of what I call funny money fines. And I don't have a problem with a $200,000 lien on a $25,000 house. If the guy that owns that $25,000 house is an absolute jerk who just isn't going to comply, I don't have a problem with that at all. I do have a problem with a $200,000 lien on a $25,000 house that accumulated because the respondent was dead and it continued to roll on, which is why I've mentioned to a few folks, I don't know if I've ever mentioned it to you, that I was more than willing to entertain the notion of them gathering 3, 5, 10 of these things at a time, dump them on the program here, and then let's find and notice these people and say, what's the problem? Are you, I just never did my final inspection. Okay, get your final inspection. Let's settle up now. You know, what's the problem here? I did this, I did that. You know, my dog died. I'm unemployed, yada, yada, yada. Okay, well, then we'll reduce it to this, but from here on out, this is where it's going to be. Or, what's the problem? You know, go to heck, I'm not going to do anything. Okay, then as far as I'm concerned, it stays the way it is. I don't have I know it sounds ridiculous to say there's a $200,000 lien, like I said, on a $25,000 house. But then if the cause for it to get to that point is the respondent's conduct himself, I don't care. It really doesn't matter to me because that's just somebody who is going to cooperate no matter what you do. And as far as I'm concerned, if he's embarrassed by that fine, if he loses his property because of that fine, I don't have any problem sleeping at night over that. The ones that I think make everyone look silly are the ones that are just allowed to accumulate ad nauseum until all of a sudden somebody says, gosh, there's $16 million owed the city. City's strapped for cash. We sure could use that. I mean, I've never envisioned this as being a taxing body. you know, for the populace. It's not. It's a come into compliance or be punished thing. So I'm not really looking to fill the city's coffers here with fine money. We are looking to get properties into compliance and dealing as harshly as needs to be done with people that just won't cooperate. So, you know, I'm more inclined to saying, you know, let's have this discussion again 6 months or a year from now. And in the interim, we're going to start dragging some of those out. And I'm not talking about me, whether it's the code enforcement board or whomever. And notify these people and say, okay, what's the problem? You know, and at that point, we'll learn a little bit more about each case, and we'll weed out the ones that are going to make the city look silly.
Right.
I'm not opposed, like I said, and I'm repeating myself now, I'm not opposed to an outrageous fine, you know, on some dirt poor shack if it's somebody that's just basically telling us to take a hike. That doesn't bother me a bit.
You made that point before, and that point hasn't fallen on deaf ears, and be fair to the code inspection and the code staff. That's something that we didn't get to reemphasize at the commission meeting either. Part of the presentation from Deputy Chief Bears was that that's pretty much the adopted policy now of code inspection. He announced it as the three F's, and with that third F being followed through, that cases don't close just because we walked out of code.
Find it, fix it, and follow up.
And so their case isn't over until that property is either barred into compliance or taken to foreclosure, but it's not going to leave their desk. So it's a case that continues operation, and they now are charged with the responsibility of keeping their cases active and alive. And they've been assigning out the old cases with the role of bombarding Amy with notifying people that guess what, you have a lien, and having them call in to find out what they can do about it. So that's kind of the practice that's been adopted. Granted, the latter part of the year coming into, you know, preparation, but as a recognition that this is something we need to be doing, it's something that the city ought to be doing, and it's not become part of the practice.
Well, we've got a backlog of these things that need to be addressed. You know, I know it's time consuming. I know it's involved, but it either has to be done or somebody's just going to have to write all that off. And I would not be urging anybody to write it off because you've probably got a bunch of jerks in there that deserve to pay. Okay? Now, there might be other extenuating circumstances where it just isn't going to matter. I don't know. But somebody needs to get rid of the backlog. And then, I don't know, maybe plan on from here on out, every time someone's fined, maybe it automatically comes back up on an agenda a year down the road or 2 years down the road.
We've talked about those.
Or 3 years down the road, whatever it may be.
Right.
But, yeah, the follow-up is important because otherwise the city's just going to look silly.
Yeah.
And like I said, I don't have a problem with the fines. And the other thing it would allow us to do is almost eliminate the lien review process because, you know, you might sit there and say, you know, you might have that argument. Mr. McKellish's house is only worth $50,000. Now he owes $75,000. Okay, well, let's fix a fine amount or a lien amount right now while we still have some recollection of the case, you know, as opposed to it coming to us, you know,
4 years later.
5, 10, 15 years later, and we're just looking at documents and trying to, you know, and not remembering much of it.
Yeah, and that point, Mr. Kelly, one other point there, as you were talking, I think would be worth making note of, or at least making you aware of, is that we had talked about the amnesty program, and the code board itself expressed when we had our code board workshop, and as well at the commission meeting, Mr. Bannerman and Neil Harrington were there. And they expressed with the code board their desire to have those cases reviewed for amnesty to come to them, even though the intent of the amnesty program is pretty much a checklist, objective review. They do this, this, and this, bring the property into compliance and meet certain other criteria, then they get this amount reduced or this fixed reduction. We haven't defined that yet because there are different programs.
That's okay. That matters.
So, but I mean, it's something that...
I'll be honest with you, I think the respondents ought to have an opportunity if... Well, never mind, I shouldn't say that.
Well, what I was saying, though, is as far as their design, our plan was, and the way we've seen it administered, it's just, it's an administrative decision. It's because it's an administrative deduction, and it's their liens that are owned by the city, you know, pursuant to statute of the city's liens, that just have a checklist, administrator makes the decision, or a board, or a committee makes a decision and move forward. But their preference is that the ones that were co-board come to co-board, and presumably the ones that were magistrate come to magistrate for this amnesty. And so that may ultimately be the way that it will be done, that we may be adding a section for when we do the amnesty program, set up the amnesty reviews for, and presumably, to some extent, they will be unilateral, because it's not our intent to provide a need or a method for arguing the right of amnesty. It's amnesty. It's amnesty. It's a grace that's given based upon meeting the criteria. Well, we've seen jurisdictions that have reduced them as much as we've suggested something between 5% to 15%. Not reduction for the total amount of the lien.
Well, what you're calling amnesty is exactly what I'm talking about. The key here is getting these people in the building.
Right.
And then talking about it. So where are we at with this? Well, I didn't even know I was supposed to call for a final inspection. Well, way to go, knucklehead. Now you got a $30,000 fine against you. Oh, I'm sorry, it's in compliance. Okay, we'll verify it's in compliance, and now maybe we'll knock it down to the $1,500 that it costs for all of our people to go do all this stuff. But that fine's going to be set. It's going to be established, and we're not going to be, whatever it may be, we're not going to be revisiting it. No bother asking for a lien review. You just got your review. And that way we're making a contemporaneous decision with additional information regarding what's happened after the fine that, to me, is not only more equitable, but it's more sustainable, if you will, if you ever do get challenged.
Yeah, well, I saw some extremely successful.
So what you're calling amnesty, I'm basically saying, let's find out what the circumstances are post-fine.
Right.
And then let's see if we can't get it resolved, and understanding that it may still very well end up in a fine, but it'd be a heck of a lot less.
Yeah, our hope, the thought with an amnesty program is that you actually create a notification in mass with a large media event of this is what's being made available, whether it's a 3-month period or 6-month period. And during that time, people become aware of it with understanding the first criteria is compliance and motivate them to go out there. Those who said, I can't do anything about it anyway, I got this $500,000 fine on my back, go over there, go out, take care of the property, come in and get the relief. And so it's that kind of
motivation.
I'm sorry.
So you want to make a big splash.
Yes, and so that it's something done in mass and catch the whole group. And then I think we'd still have a need for lien review. Some people, 5% won't be significant. If you have a $250,000 lien that you don't think you deserve, then 5% isn't very meaningful.
No, I'm just talking about clearing up the backlog right now.
But if it brings them in to talk about it, that's the first step to us getting everything approved. So that's what all of this. And I think we've been experiencing that to some extent. They've been calling in, and people have been saying what they've always said. I didn't know this was here. Mm-hmm. The person who this was on died a long time ago, and so forth. And we're telling them how to get a job. So I would assume we're going to have more lien reviews coming our way, even from that.
We would have had a few this month, but the people couldn't work their schedules out for this month. But there should be some next month.
And you know, the thing about it is, I don't know how many of these are there. How many of these unresolved liens are out there?
About 300, you say?
470 cases is when the report generates.
But that's now, the total that's, number of cases. That's including those that are current and active.
It says. As of December, I believe.
Okay, so probably can take off 25 of them or 50 of them. So about 350, 400.
Yeah.
See, okay, first off, I understand the amnesty program. Yeah, that sounds like a cool idea. Now, after that, before that, during it, whatever, to me, and I know it would be a burden on the short term. I know it would be a huge burden. But let's say you got 400 of these. And then let's say, you know what we're going to do, Mr. Vitalogy? You're going to have an extra 20 cases. Because we're going to send out notices to 20 of these 400. We're going to do that every month until this number is down to zero. And then they're going, and I promise you, half of them aren't going to show up anyway.
I think that's what they're doing. I mean, you're handing out to all of the code inspectors about 10 of them, and you get about 100 of them with duties and notification.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's
what. But my point is, you start getting these people through here, and, you know, again, I don't mind the news journal calling up and saying, gee, why in the world did you fine poor little old grandma $200,000? I don't mind that as long as I can say grandma was notified of this hearing on multiple occasions. We bent over backward. We invited her back. Grandma didn't have the common courtesy to come down and even try to explain the circumstances to her. So as far as I'm concerned, you can bury grandma's lane with her because I don't care. You know, I don't have a problem with that. To me, as long as the ridiculousness of the fine is the respondent's fault and not the city's, I don't have a problem with the amount. That just demonstrates how stubborn they're being. But like I said, if we have some process whereby we can start notifying these people, look, we've got a lien against you. Come on, come to our next city commission, or come to the next code enforcement board meeting or special magistrate proceeding. We want to review this to see if there anything can be resolved. You know, first off, like I said, I don't know how many would even show up. If they don't show up, I don't have a problem with their fines. Not a problem at all. As long as we're satisfied that we've got proper notice, so someone doesn't come somewhere down the road, you know, and the fact that we've got yet another notice post-fine going out to these people that we're satisfied with, then when the lien review comes up and they go, oh, we never received notice, we'll go, BS, get all the notice in the world. So, again, the backlog is something that needs to be addressed. I think you should start chipping away at it a little bit every month. And that way a lot of these things could get resolved. The stubborn ones, I don't care what happens to them, as long as the fine is reasonable. I mean, and that's also a process by which, and if they don't show up, you can reduce the thing. Say, okay, you know, this guy's got a, what's the story here, Tony? This guy's got a $200,000 lien. What's his house worth? House worth, maybe 50. All right, reduce it to $50,000. Same effect, just doesn't make us look goofy.
I agree.
I mean, it's a mechanical thing, you know, and it's just a matter of getting it started. Yeah, and then someday, if I live long enough, I'll see someone actually try to foreclose one of these things.
Well, I mean, we
did we ever foreclose
on it? You know, I think all it was not, to say it was unsuccessful would be an unfair statement. We got compliance on every one of the properties. Some of them have been because we were before that myself, but nevertheless, we got compliance on all the properties. We had 21 properties. Seven of them, I think, was been reported last survey, I think. Seven of them were resolved with, by us having to throw in the towel and say, fine, the judge isn't going to do this, we just can't get it done. And just leave the lien and we back out after we spend all the money. And I understood the judge's manner of thinking. Now, we were dealing with ultimate, as we got into this more tough economic time, we were dealing with people who wanted to keep their properties. And the judge had a hard time taking property from someone who was present and actively fighting to hold on. Now, people who were, you know, defaulted and or who were heirs who didn't care and that type of thing, they were easy cases. But he had a tough time with people who said, I want my property, something, you know, kind of like the gentleman with the dogs. I mean, I want my house. And so we jumped a lot of hoops. I mean, we were scheduled for mediation, we were this, we were that, but this was causing more and more with private counsel. We intend that when we start foreclosing again, which I'm told we will, we'll be doing it in-house, probably with the new attorney. We'll be reviewing them with issues of, like I said before, unilaterally reducing them to a number that makes some sense going in, and probably asking for a court to do it with an action and ask the court to, as a second count, to if they don't grant foreclosure, to order them to comply with the order.
See, and this process you're talking about can only enhance the foreclosure potential, because I'm sure inevitably you got a judge sitting there saying, how silly is this? You got a $200,000 lien on a $50,000 house. I mean, you would hope that would provoke a judge to say, well, heck yeah, you're obviously entitled to your foreclosure. But instead, judge goes, this is silly. This is ridiculous. Now, on the other hand, you know, if I were in front of that same judge and I was, you know, and the defendant was there and we said, well, Your Honor, this was the fine. It accumulated all the way up to $200,000. We requested that this fellow come in so we could revisit the situation. He either showed up and we agreed on this and he still didn't pay it, or he didn't show up at all and we decided we revisited it for it to meet something that we would consider a fair and reasonable fine proportionate to the violation, notwithstanding its accrual over an extended period of time. Then I can see a judge being a little more considerate of that. And so, you know, personally, I'd be putting off foreclosures for a year or two. I'd get this backlog through here. And for those folks that didn't pay then I'd be making that decision as far as whether or not to foreclose.
Thanks.
10-4. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, we'll see you again.
It's a tough one, and the economy right now doesn't make it any easier at all. All right. Anything else?
No, sir.
Be adjourned.